Hey friends, welcome back to Pastor's Wives Tell All. Today we get to chat with our friend Sarah Hosey. Sarah is a daughter of the king, devoted wife of a handsome army veteran slash Purple Heart recipient slash sheriff's department chaplain slash former pastor, mother of four beautiful girls, and most recently a published children's book author. Sarah's life is a testament to love, courage, and the unwavering belief in brighter tomorrows. A devout Christian, Sarah's faith is the anchor that steadies her amid the storms of life. Her unwavering trust in God serves as a guiding light, inspiring not only her actions, but also the words she imparts to her children and the young readers of her children's books. In this episode, Sarah shares her traumatic story of nearly losing her husband twice while he served in the military and how God turned a dark story into one of light, salvation, provision, and the start of a life of ministry. Grab the popcorn for this one and maybe a box of tissues. This literal story of coming back from the dead will bring hope to anyone desperately interceding in prayer for the salvation of a loved one. Now let's get to this God-sized story of redemption.
Hi, I'm Jessica.
I'm Jenna.
And I'm Stephanie.
And you are listening to Pastor's Wives Tell All,
a podcast by pastor's wives for church leaders and anyone desiring to take a peek inside our glass house.
We are breaking down walls and crushing pastor's wives stereotypes within the church.
We want pastor's wives and other ministry leaders to know that they are not alone in this. Plus, this is basically therapy for the three of us with a whole lot of dance parties. Woo, 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 woo. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
We are so pumped to have you on our podcast today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yes, you've been listening to us for a long time, apparently.
Mm-hmm. I sure have. I just love what you guys are doing. I think that there's something to be said about the quiet women that sit in the background and just, you know, support their husbands and watch them. And I just really appreciate what you guys do.
Oh, did she think
we
were quiet?
Can we take a moment that she said quiet?
None of us are quiet.
I mean, the voices in our heads and our husbands do not count, but the voices we say out loud are calm, cool, and collected.
There you go. So I've actually met Sarah like 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. We attended church together and we were in a small group together. And so this is so cool to be able to just hang out and catch up with you and for you to get to tell your story. I'm so excited.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. So your husband is a pastor, but he has not always been one.
Okay. He has not.
So, and y'all have a story that you're about to tell that is insane. Mm. I mean, it's a story of, you know, trauma, God's protection, provision, redemption. I mean,
trauma.
You name it. Okay.
Trauma.
Yeah. Mm. Trauma. So can you share a little bit about your husband, John's time in the military and everything that happened to you during the early years of your marriage?
Oh, goodness. Okay. So I hope you guys, I mean, we'll see how long this goes.
We're buckled up and ready.
Take as long as you need, girl.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see, where do I start? So I have been married to my husband for 26 years. We got married in 1998. We were, people always say, oh, were you high school sweethearts? No. We were best friends in high school, but he was a little bit of a wild child, and I did not want any part of that. So we were best friends in high school, and then shortly after high school got married. And a bunch of struggles and failed jobs. And two kids later, John decided to visit an army recruiter without telling me.
Mm. Wow.
We have a big phrase in our marriage that says, we always tell each other, you are lucky I'm your friend right now, because your wife would have not known. But the friend in me, when John makes decisions, the friend in me can say, well, this is my best friend, so I'm not going to kill him right now. I'm going to start using that.
That's so great.
Yeah. We take off my wife hat. He takes off his husband hat, and he'll even come in like when he has a hard day sometimes, and he'll say, I just really need my friend right now. And I'm like, hey, what's up? How are you? And he's all, no, not there. Just talk to me. So he came in and said, I remember I was nursing our second daughter And he came in and he came in from work and he said, "You'll never guess what I did today." And I said, "I don't know. Did you get a promotion?" As I'm like rocking this baby. And he goes, "I joined the military and the guy's coming to talk to us tonight." And I was like, "What?"
Oh my gosh.
And so the military recruiter came to talk to us. John went in the summer of 2001. So this was before September 11th happened.
Yeah, wow.
We hadn't been in conflict in so many years. I think honestly, he thought, "I'm a young father. I'm 20 something years old. I'm going to lose my job. I need to get insurance and housing and a job." And that military made sense to him. He had had friends that went in. And so he made the decision. And when he was in one of his trainings, is when September 11th happened. And I remember being at my mom's going, "No, we did not just get into the military. And now the entire world is changing." And so from 2001 to, goodness, for 11 years, I basically raised babies while John deployed. He deployed 5 total times. He went to Afghanistan, Iraq, back to Afghanistan. It was back and forth, back and forth. We've seen some beautiful places. We went to North Carolina. We had a baby in Germany, which is a whole nother story. We went to Georgia. And then we spent some time. We were able to spend some time longer in Georgia because he was home. He was on the home front. But to say that our marriage was sunshine and rainbows and the beautiful thing that people like to make on Instagram would be a vast lie. It was hard. John and I, when we got married, we checked all of the boxes. You know, he thought I was pretty. I thought he was handsome. We'd been friends forever. We should get married. Yeah, that makes so much sense. But we didn't do the things like, "Hey, like, where's your spiritual foundation? Do you, you know," we just didn't, as 20 somethings, we didn't care. I mean, I honestly saw a really handsome guy driving a black truck and I really didn't care. I mean, to be quite honest with you. And when we got married, we had the assumption that, well, we'll just do the church thing every once in a while. You'll go to your church. He was, his parents were Catholic at the time and he was kind of attending sometimes with them. I was raised a Southern Baptist. And so we kind of thought, we just had this fairy tale idea that we would somehow, I would go to his church. Sometimes he would come to mine and Jesus would just somehow find his way in. I mean, I don't know why we never thought that would work. So to say that we had a faith foundation all those years in the military, we did not. I prayed for John's salvation. People like to say now that they know us, they always say, "Oh my gosh, Sarah, how can I get my husband who's a non-believer to be a believer?" And I said, "Well, you pray for him." And they say, well, they're looking for some magic solution. And they say, "So how long does it take?" And I'm like, "You don't want to know." I prayed every day for my husband's salvation for 19 years of marriage, 19 years. I took babies to church by myself. We were together because we loved each other so much, but to say we struggled. Yeah. So John deployed 5 times and then our last duty station was Alaska, which was crazy and beautiful and an amazing place to visit. But don't live there. I admire the women that can do it. It's a whole nother world out there.
Noted.
Yes. It's a beautiful place to visit. But I think for me, taking my kids to school in the dark, picking my kids up in the dark during the winter, it was hard. Yeah. So John deployed right in November when we got to Alaska, and that was November of 2011. And then in 2012, he was severely injured by an IED blast. John remembers his side. I remember my side. I think when an Army wife has a husband deployed, we sleep with our phones. You take a shower with your phone right next to you. Anytime. And the problem is now, I think back now, every time my phone rings with an unknown caller, because spam callers are constantly calling, I would hate life if I was having to answer that phone right now, because back then, every time a phone rang that said unknown caller, I was like, hello, is it him? Hi, how are you? And because he was calling from satellite phones everywhere. And so this one particular night, I remember going out to dinner with my sister, and the phone rang, and I just thought, okay, I just stopped like I always did, and I answered the phone. And it was John, but he sounded very, very different, different than I'd ever heard him. His voice was really shaky. He kept saying, my friends are gone. My back hurts. There's so much blood, Sarah, so much blood. And I am freaking out. So I told my sister, pull over the car. It's kind of like that thing you do when you like, I don't know the directions, turn the radio down. Yeah. As if that's you find where you're going.
Right.
Like, I don't understand why I do that. But it was the same situation. I was like, I just needed her to everything to stop. And so I listened for a few minutes, and I kept saying, John, tell me. And he was so kind of in and out of things. And then this person who I promise you sounded like he was 12 years old, got on the phone and said, ma'am, we're going to do everything we can. And the line went dead for the next 48 hours.
Oh my gosh.
48 hours.
48 hours.
Sarah. Ooh. That's.
Oh girl.
It was
awful.
In the meantime, I got phone calls from the Red Cross where it was like different accounts of what had happened, but nobody had their story straight. I mean, I think here we are 2024. The world is a little different now, but back when the war was in full swing, people were doing the best that they could with what they had. Yeah. They just didn't. They were trying to get information, but they couldn't get too much information. I mean, because there was not just my husband involved in the accident. And so you have to alert all of the families, especially the families of the fallen, before you notify the families of the injured. The families of the fallen soldiers whose lives are taken, their families have to be notified before me. And so I think that's where the delay was, but the waiting of not knowing.
Oh, I
cannot
how
imagine.
Bad this was. The good thing was the girls and I were on vacation. We weren't in Alaska. We were in Albuquerque, New Mexico with my mom and my sisters. And so I basically did what I always do. I said, John needs me. I have to go. But I didn't want to take my girls with me who were very young at the time. I had three of them at the time. And I didn't want to take them to the hospital. When the call finally came through, I heard he was going to San Antonio. It makes me get all emotional. But the day I heard from him, I got a phone call from a nurse. And she said, is this Sarah Hosey? And I said, it is. And she said, I have a patient next to me. Mm-hmm. And he's supposed to be resting. And he's about to go in for another surgery. But he said, all he keeps saying over and over and over again is her name is Sarah. Her name is Sarah. Her name is Sarah. And she said, and it's breaking my heart. And she said, and if you could just talk to him for a few minutes, I think he'll go back to sleep.
Aww.
And I said, so he's alive and wants to talk. And she was like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So I got on the phone and I said, John, and he said, well, he always goes, well, hey, you know, like, and that's how I knew it was him. Cause he always just has this like, you know, like just deep, like, hey, you know, like we're on a date at the movies or something. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I said, are you okay? And he goes, yeah. But of course that was like medicine right. and all the things. And I said, I love you. And he said, I love you more. And that's how I knew everything was, you know? And so the lady and then the nurse got back on the phone and she said, he's going to have one more surgery here in Germany. And then he's going to be medevaced. Barring all goes well, he's going to be medevaced to Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, which is where you can meet him. And I said, okay, I'll be there. And so thank goodness, my gosh, I've never been more thankful for my mom or sisters. I left my girls there in Albuquerque and I flew to San Antonio. We ended up bringing the girls with us later. John, again, when I first got there, he just got really agitated. John, they always say John's a big bear. I mean, he's not a smaller guy, which I mean, I like that about him. but he just got, as soon as he saw me there, then I felt like recovery could begin. those first few days, they kept him in a medically induced coma. His body was shattered. I don't know how detailed we want to go into this, but I will say he was just as handsome as ever, but broken everywhere else. We joke and say that I'm going to be the coolest old lady wife ever because I've already done all of the things. I've already bathed him and wiped him and changed him and done all the things. So you just don't ever have to worry about that. Because the thing is, when you have a 30-something rough and tough soldier in a hospital bed, he is not going to allow other people to do those things. So I kind of just jumped in both feet. I had no idea how to be a nurse, but I knew that my person needed me. And so I kind of jumped in. I don't know how much we want to go into detail about what all happened, but I will say John received 33 surgeries in 6 months.
Wow. Oh my heavens.
And if they would keep coming out, the doctor would visit with me. They'd come in the next day after a surgery. And he would say, okay, we're going to go in again. And I finally met him in the hallway. And I said, doctor, I was just frustrated. I was like, when are you guys going to be done? Because it was like they would have him in and then they would have to tweak something else. And then they'd bring him back out and they would have to do something else. And he just, the way that the doctor described it to me that day was, he said, your husband was in a car crash on steroids. He was not supposed to survive.
Wow.
He shattered his femur, which is the strongest bone in your body. In the field, he was pronounced dead for 27 minutes, which is unthinkable, except we all know what a big God we have because...
Hold on. I have a question right here.
Yeah, you do.
Does he remember anything from those 27 minutes?
So he remembers calling me, and then he remembers passing out. And he said he remembers seeing his grandfather. He said he remembers talking to his grandpa and his grandpa going, I'll see you later. And then John, and then he remembers waking up. And then he just kind of like, when I went back, I took John later back to Afghanistan and we visited and we got to see the guys that were on the ground there. And I talked to this I remember walking down a hallway and this younger kid like walked passing by me and he was like, hey, Mrs. Hosey. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like when you just know those voices.
Yeah.
And it was that kid that said he was going to do everything to save John. And I grabbed a hold of him and held on to him for like, and I think he's not a kid. He's like 22 years old, but I think he was still like, what is this woman doing to me? And if you hear the account from the guys on the ground, they're just funny. Military men have a funny way of describing things without filter. And so he just said to me, Mrs. Hosey, it was like something out of a ghost story. And I was like, oh, gee, wow, where are we going with this kid? And he goes, he was gone, ma'am. He was gone. And I said, okay. And this is, of course, like, you know, they don't have medically accurate things out there. So I don't know. John, I'm pretty sure his heart was beating faintly, but with the medics on the ground, they can't, you know, detect that. Yeah. But he said he was gone, ma'am. We were upset. I mean, we were getting ready. I mean, ma'am, we were getting ready to zip the bag. And I was like, what? And he goes, and your husband sat up out of nowhere. And he just said, what are you guys doing? And then John passed out. But John doesn't remember. He remembers calling me. He remembers maybe seeing his grandpa, and he doesn't remember anything for at least the first few months at the hospital because it was so many surgeries.
Yeah.
That they just, and then they got him. I remember the day they walked in with this really cool, it's like a manly wheelchair. It was going to take you off roading and it was going to do all of these things. And they were basically introducing it as John's way of life. They were trying to say, you're not in a wheelchair. Like, you know, you're in this cool track wheelchair and look at all the things it can do. And John said, get that thing out of here. Mm. And I remember him saying, I have daughters and I will be walking those girls down the aisles. Mm-hmm. And today he is a walking, functioning, breathing, beautiful human being, which I just, wow. It's just amazing.
I have a question. Just mm-hmm. so
was he the only one to survive? You know, I think people listening would want to know, was he the only one that survived, or is that something that you can talk about? I mean, not naming names, but
we can. There was three people in the truck. It was John, actually four. Yeah. John, his driver, and then a gunner, and then an interpreter that they had. There was only one sweet guy that is not with us anymore. And we named our daughter after him. Her name is Tyler. And so Nick, I can say Nick because we call Nick my brother son because he's been a part of our family ever since that day. And he's like, well, you know, John's like, well, he's my army brother, but he's my kid because he's so young. And so Nick lost his arm that day, but so we had, so three survived, one did not. Wow. Yeah. So it was pretty crazy. And so after 6 months in the hospital, things were so crazy for us before this accident that as a Christian, I looked at it as Jesus saying, okay, you guys have all of these beautiful things and they can be taken from you at any moment. I need you guys to wake up and I need you to take care of each other from this point forward. And to me, I was like, yep. Whatever John had done in the past, whatever I had done in the past, I looked at the accident in Afghanistan like, this is us. Whatever happened in the past doesn't matter. We're going to move forward as a family. I thought this would be our aha moment, John's aha moment. And I couldn't have been more wrong. John, his body got better as our bodies do, but his mind did not. As soon as his body recovered, he, as happy as he was to be back with us, he more wanted to be back with his men in the field. He was fighting in a war one day and woke up in a hospital the next day. So in his mind, he was still very, very much in Afghanistan. And I think that I was more paying attention to his physical wounds than his emotional. And I thought, well, I'm going to move him to a city where he can be near his brothers. So we moved to Las Vegas. We started hanging out with our friends. And I think deep down, John just kind of wished he could be back in the military. He wanted to be back serving. He'd been in for so long. It was the only thing he knew. And he was going to the VA. He was doing everything he was supposed to. And he emotionally and mentally was on a path of self-destruction. He got into some dangerous things, riding his motorcycle. He got involved with some people he shouldn't have. And I was just blindly following him like I've always done since we were in high school. Like, oh, we're going here. Oh, John's going, Sarah's going. And for that few years in between, I mean, for the few years after the accident, John just, he suffered. And I wanted him to pull out of this so fast and I couldn't understand him and he couldn't understand me and our civilian friends didn't get it. And he was going to destroy himself.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so I got desperate. In the military, they tell you, you know, well, if your marriage is struggling, they always offer these like marriage retreats. And I said, well, we're not in the military anymore, but I wonder if I can find something. And so I went on Google and tried to find Samaritan's Purse has a they have a thing for military people called Operation Healer Patriots. And they take men and women, they take couples to Alaska for a week. And they kind of, you know, it's like a marriage counseling basically and thing. Now I knew that my husband, if I told him we were going to a Bible study in Alaska with a bunch of, you know, Christians, he would have told me no. So, and he'll be so proud of me for admitting this, but I totally lied. I totally fibbed. I totally lied. I told him that that we had been offered a fishing trip in Alaska, and I basically marketed it like a timeshare. I told him that we had been invited to Alaska and that in order for him to be able to fish, he may need to sit in a few Bible studies. And he fell for it.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, he did.
That's great.
And I took him and we got off the plane And Franklin Graham is standing there like, hey, John, hey, Sarah. And my growing up in a Christian home with my mama, my heart was like, oh, my God. And John is like, hey, what's up? Like, he didn't know. He was like, I was like, oh, all right. You just met Frank, whatever. Just moving on. And John was there. John was there to fish and sit through what he had to. And I remember a day. It was like 3 days in, one of the chaplains there said, John, can you and I have a private conversation? Because John was kind of sitting there with his arms crossed, you know, not really paying attention to anything that was going on. And the chaplain just said, hey, can you and I, and John's like, yeah, I'll go talk to you, but this isn't going to go the way you think it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And they were in a conversation for over 4 hours. And I started to wonder, like, did he leave? Did he drown the guy in the lake? Like,
oh my gosh.
And so I remember sitting in our cabin, just like wondering where he was. And he came in, and I'm telling you, the look of relief and happiness and beauty on his handsome face was like palpable. I could feel what was going on. And he just said, did you know that Jesus Christ died on the cross for my sins, and that all these things I've done as a man, all these horrible things I've done, do you know that he just forgives them all, and that I can go to heaven, and that you can go to heaven? And part of me was like, I've been saying that for so many years. And then the other part of me was like, tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more. And he was so excited. And I am telling you, he has never been the same. Never been the same. That day, life changed for him. Like it all clicked. It all clicked for him. He was going home a changed man. A changed man.
Well, before we move on, what is the prayer? Like, I know that you would always pray a certain prayer for him. And now it's like you are in this room and he is telling you all this stuff, you know, and you're seeing your prayers answered. What is that prayer that you prayed for him?
I feel like before we went to Alaska, all the years I prayed for him, I said, God, if you could just change my husband, it would make my life so much easier. He could take my kids to church. We wouldn't struggle. Me. Right before we went to Alaska, my prayer for John was, God, you do what you will with your child. He belongs to you and not me. And I really feel like that was the aha moment for John and for me, because had God saved John when I was doing the whole, like, save him for me, I would be able to sit here and talk to you ladies and go, yep, Sarah's the coolest. Pat me on the back. Save my husband. And now I can look at you and honestly say that had nothing to do with me. Like, I always tell people, I used to wish that I could take John and God to a coffee shop, right? Before this, I used to say, if I could just get these two to sit across the table from each other, I would say, John, this is the creator of the universe and he loves you. God, this is John. He's a tough nut to crack, maybe, you know? And I realized what I had to do is get away from the table. Just get away from the table and trust that God had him and was going to save him in the time that his perfect plan, not my perfect plan. And so I think that it's just beautiful.
So when you said that when your prayer changed, all I can think is about, isn't that the Holy Spirit though?
Yes.
Because you could have beat it into his head over and over and over again. And I know there are women, possibly even listening now, who have husbands that actually aren't believers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're going, I have prayed and I have prayed and I have prayed and I have talked to him and talked to him and talked to him. Because you even said, I've been saying that for years.
Yes.
We can say all we want.
Mm-hmm.
But our job is just to plant the seed.
Right. Yes.
The Holy Spirit is the one that's going to come and do the work.
Mm-hmm.
His timing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if we could take the pressure off ourselves and say, Lord, open hands, here you go.
Here's
my loved one.
Yes. here he is. Yeah.
Do what you will with your child.
Not just for our husbands, but for our children.
Yes.
Yeah. For our family. Oh, yeah. Like, it is 100% our job to, like you said, plant those seeds, but it is not our job to drag them to the altar.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because then we get to somehow, then the glory becomes about us and not Jesus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And well, it's not real.
No. And I would never want someone to say, I believe in Jesus because Sarah told me to.
Well, right.
That's not genuine faith. Mm-hmm. You need to find, you need to find Jesus on your own, no matter how long it takes. If it takes one day or 19 years.
Oh my goodness. That is so powerful, Sarah. Like, I know that there will be so many people who listen to this that will have that aha moment of like, oh my gosh, I've been trying to control this person. I've been trying to, you know, be the one who gets them to make this decision. And that's so good. I'm so glad you said that.
Hey friend, we will get right back to our episode, but we want to take a moment and thank our patrons. You guys keep our podcast going.
If you are not a patron and you would like to consider donating to our podcast ministry, we would be so grateful. And we might even do a happy dance.
When you become a patron, you get perks like being the first to hear about special info and retreats. You get bonus episodes, monthly devotionals, lock screens, and more.
Plus, we have added a new $1 tier for those who believe in us and what we're doing, just because you love us.
So head on over to our show notes and click on the Patreon link to learn more. Now let's get back to our episode. Tell us a little about that transition because he became a pastor.
Yes.
Right. So tell us a little bit about that transition from being in the military to becoming a pastor and what position he ended up getting. Mm-hmm. And just tell us about how that was for you and your family.
Okay. So the transition in the beginning was different. John had come home, this changed man, but our daughters, there was four of them. There is four of them. They didn't know what to do with him. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think our friends knew what to do with him. I don't think I even knew what to do with him, because I think the biggest struggle was I had been spiritually leading my household for so many years. And then John came in and he was like, nope, the Bible said right here. I mean, I fondly call my husband a baby Christian, but his faith is intoxicating. Like, if you remember being in Bible school as a little girl and hearing like the story of Noah and knowing it was true, that is John on a daily basis. He reads his Bible with this infection. Like, he reads it like a textbook. It is a history book to him. And he will go, but it also, his military background makes him very black and white. If God said it, we will do it.
Yeah.
I'm all, wow, whoa, whoa. Like, woo. And so when he came back from Alaska, he had that. If God said it, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
If God said we're going to church, we're going to church. If God said I'm going to leave my family, I'm going to leave my family. And it was infectious and scary all at the same time for everybody that it was happening to. Because there were some people that were like, whoa, whatever he has, sign me up for that. And then we also had the John's drinking the Jesus Kool-Aid, and I don't want anything to do with that family. Right. So we had both sides of it, more positive than negative. But it was just, people just could not believe the change in this person. And he would say, no, let me tell you. And he was like evangelizing and sharing the gospel. And people were like, hi, I want to have, a coffee with you. And he was like, but he'd heard this amazing thing and he couldn't let the sun go down without telling everybody he knew. Wow. And, so he, in the course, before he got into full-time ministry, he was invited back to Afghanistan, which was scary for me. But there is a program that believes that if a man like John, who was injured, if they were injured and woke up in a hospital, if they leave the country on their own terms, it's a different thing. But if they wake up in a hospital, there's something in the psyche that if you take them back and let them leave on their own two feet, that somehow their mind will come home with them. Mm. So John, he came to me and said, there's this organization. They want to put me back in uniform and they want to take me back to Afghanistan. I was like, but he thought, I can tell everybody what I know now. And I can tell the guys that are there. And he was looking at it as that evangelical opportunity. And so he did it. I mean, he went over there and he got to share the gospel and tell people. And that was, I think, his very first into, I want to do this as a career. So then we got Operation Heller Patriots has a, they have a reunion every year for the couples that go to Alaska. So when they take you to Alaska, it's not like, oh, you had 7 days and now marriage is peachy and have a good time. They bring you back and kind of check up on you, which I really like. So we'd been going to the reunions and then John came to me and said, I remember being at the reunion and he comes to me and he said, I need you to go upstairs right now. And I was like, I'm always like fight or flight. Like, what are we doing? Where are we going? Are we going someplace good? Are we going someplace bad? Wherever we're going, we're going. And so we go upstairs and he goes, have you ever felt like this calling? Like God just, he's like, he's talking to me and I want to talk to you. And I said, okay. And he said, I really feel like God's calling me into ministry. I want to do this. And I was like, wow. Oh, I mean, my heart exploded. I knew that when John got saved, it was going to be a big deal, but the things that God can do with his children are just, beyond comprehension. So John decided he wanted to go to ministry. But then before that, he got another call that said they were going to go on a hog hunt in Texas. And so John always looks at something like, if I'm going to go with veterans and I can talk to them and I can do the things. And because he really still has a heart for our military. It's his wheelhouse. There isn't a military man that can look at John and go, you just don't know. John can say, exactly. Tell me something I don't know. Mm-hmm. So he really has a heart for them and for their families. And we both do. And so he went to this hog hunt and I can remember getting a phone call one morning and it was from my friend Callie, whose husband was there also. And she said, have you heard from John? There was a helicopter crash and the guys were on it. And I was like, excuse me? Like, what did somebody just like the no. Like in the books that you read, or the movies you watch, there is a terrible thing that happens to these families. And then all of a sudden you're like, and that was their moment. And now everything's happy and it's all great. And so for something tragic to happen to us twice, I was like, you've got to be kidding me, right? And she said, Sarah, I'm going to come over. Let's talk. And so we're going to wait for the guys to talk to us. Now, John, his advice to everybody would be, if you've ever been in a helicopter crash, don't FaceTime your wife. I got a FaceTime of him just beat up, bloody, battered, like, hey. And I was like, wow. Are you? And
oh my gosh.
And I think that my heart automatically went like, not Afghanistan again, not Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Every part of me thought like, I don't want to go through that again. I don't want him to be lost again. I don't want all of the things, like all of the scary things that kind of the enemy just kind of puts in, you know, like, here you go again, here you go again. And John was the one that said, we are going to, I think he could tell because I was just like, what if, what if, what if, what if, what if? And he said, we're going to stop right now. And we're going to pray. Mm. We're going to pray. And he was the one in pain, but he was totally calm. He was like, we've got this. We've got this. God got us through the last one. He's going to get us through again. And recovery from the second one, I don't pretend to know God's timing or his planning or why he does things. But what I do know to be true is when I got the call from Afghanistan, it was nighttime and it was dark. When I got the call from Texas, it was light and I was having coffee in the morning. So it's like that contrast between without faith and now with. Mm. So it's like we suffered without faith. I was doing it all by myself the first time. And then God showed me like, it's light outside and you're going to do this again. And then in Afghanistan, he was scared and shaken and unsure. And in the helicopter crash in Texas, he was like, I've got this. God is with me. He's with us. We're going to do this. And so as much as I hate that he got, his body was broken twice, I believe that God did it to show all of us like how different recovery can be with faith and how even the person in the middle of it, if they're just their faith can just change, it can change the whole perspective of everything, because everything from recovery was just, John was like, I mean, he was in pain the helicopter actually landed on his legs. Mm. I mean, he was, yes, we all, I like to say my husband has conquered land in Afghanistan, air in Texas. We will not be taking, don't ask us to go on a cruise. No, thank you. No, thank you. Oh. No, that's okay. We'll sit that one out. We'll sit that
one out. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. No, no, no. But he didn't let his faith be shaken. He just didn't. And then even, I mean, he learned to walk again, and he was talking to all of the ladies in the hospital and the people around him and telling them, they were like, this is tragic, man. And he was like, no, it's not. Like, that was tragic. This is just hurt. This is just hurt. And I mean, and 6 months later we were moving to Texas, and we've been on staff at a couple of churches. The technical term is military and first responder pastor. Mm-hmm. It's a pastor just specifically for military and first responders. We noticed after 2020, he went into ministry for veterans, but we noticed like after 2020 and all the crazy things that have been happening in the world, that really our nation's first responders, I mean, especially our police officers, they're really not that different from a veteran. The only real difference between them is a veteran goes to another country and police officers are fighting battles right here at home. So he serves as a military and first responder pastor is what the technical term is, I guess, is what you call it. And so he's currently not on a church staff. He's concentrating on his, he was asked to be the sheriff's department chaplain for the town that we live in. He's been serving there. That's a volunteer job. So that's a heavy on-call 24/7. Yeah. But he does that. He volunteers for them because he loves them. And then he's got his own private practice where he sees military and veterans here at the house and disciples and pastors and loves them.
Man. Ooh, well, I mean, I know you've just kind of answered so many of our questions we have, but one thing for me, like I'm sure people are listening going like, Sarah, who was beside you through all of this? Like who, I mean, yes, we 100% hear how your husband is now as a believer came mm-hmm. alongside of you and y'all did this together, mm-hmm. but like who was helping you and discipling you through all of this, you know, and then like, what was your role during this time? And this doesn't have to be a long part of your talk, but just like, what were you doing? Were you staying at home with all of your kids when he's been in ministry? What was your role? Kind of tell us a little bit about that.
So before, I think even when John wasn't a believer, I relied on, I am a fan, lover, fangirl, anything of women's Bible study. Mm-hmm. I found myself in solace of churches, no matter where we were, talking to Christian women who could pour into me, even, you know, because when you're going to church with your kiddos by yourself, it's a little different. But when you're in a women's Bible study, I really think there's something to be said about women's Bible studies. And we can kind of lock arms with each other, no matter where we are in our walk. Mm-hmm. And disciple to each other, which I think is my heart for now, like right now in our lives. So when John was in the hospital, I remember the focus was 110% on him, which of course it had to have been, right?
Yeah.
He's the one receiving the medications. He's the one receiving the surgeries. But I always think there needs to be someone who looks at the woman who's sitting in the folding chair in the corner and say, do you need some water? Do you need somebody to pray for you? Do you need some lunch? Have you gone to the bathroom today? And I really think ever since this happened, I really think that there is just women who are quietly screaming in their heads, but not saying anything out loud, supporting their husbands. They are suffering on the inside, but so strong on the outside. And my heart is for them. So as John has been talking to the veterans and the first responders, he always invites the spouses to come to his classes and they show up. And they sit next to their husbands and you see them sitting there and they're so proud. I mean, and they rightfully should be. But then they also need a safe talking space for themselves. Yeah. They need that place where we don't complain and gripe about our spouses, because I think there's a fine line in a talking group between, am I going to be constructive and loving and show the love of Jesus for my husband and these women? Or am I going to gripe that he does take the trash out and I can't stand
it? Yeah.
Right? And so my heart is for them. So John has part of a ministry called Reboot. And they have it for military first responders and for those who are suffering trauma. And so I went to John one day and I said, I'd really like to start just Ladies of Reboot. It's not that I have anything against the guys, but I think that women just need a safe talking group. And so that as John mentors and talks to the first responders and the veterans, he and I have gotten very good at him just saying, you know, if your spouse needs a safe place, because in the military, we have these things called family readiness groups, but they're just rah, 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 you know, you just get together. And yeah. So if you ever talk to a soldier and, you know, he's like, I'm not going to send my wife to one of those because he doesn't want all of his dirty laundry aired, which I understand. But there has to be a place where she can safely share mm-hmm. and be understood. And I think the struggle is that it's not a normal thing to be sleeping in the middle of the night and have your husband get called to someplace scary, whether it's Afghanistan or down the street. It's not a normal way of life. It's not a normal thing to have to explain to your children that your husband's friend was killed. It's just not commonplace. And so I think what I've noticed in the groups that I've had is the best thing I can see is when a woman looks at another woman and goes, me too. Mm-hmm. Because I think that until we open up those communications, like those venues for communication, we think that I'm the only one. Yeah. Right. This is too scary. I'm not talking about it. I don't want to burden anybody. But I think that when friendship is formed when we say, me too.
Yeah. Me too. I was just thinking like, man, I love that even though you have shared a lot about some really hard things that happened to you and your husband and your four kids throughout, you know, your marriage. I just hear so much. It's just so cool. I think like testimony is such a beautiful thing when we don't even have to dwell on the super hard, because you've just shared so much truth and how Jesus yeah. brought you through it. Mm-hmm. Even though those hard times, like, you know, it's not that you want to go back and relive them at all, but like how much God has changed your husband and changed you and your life and ministry is just so beautiful. And I love that y'all stepped into, like, instead of looking to the right or to the left on what traditional ministry could mm-hmm. look like, mm-hmm. you know, and well, this is the way that we need to go. Like how God directed you to that church that had that ministry available. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it was made a job description for John.
Yeah, they created yeah. it for him. Yeah.
And then not only that, but then to the ministries that y'all are doing and God is putting on mm-hmm. your hearts to start or mm-hmm. to be a part of is just so neat, because that's what we want you to hear out there is like, what God, some of the darkest, deepest things that have happened to you, he wants to use for his glory. Mm-hmm. And at any moment in your life, you or John could have gone a different path and gone a selfish path or gone, I'm done with this. I don't even want to think about this anymore. Mm-hmm. But to like dig in and put your heels in and keep going and then to see the fruit mm-hmm. and to hear the fruit is just really super cool. So just thank you, you know, thank you for, you know, we're not done yet, but just thank y'all both for your service and just hopefully everyone hears that and mm-hmm. is just super grateful. Again, we need to be reminded why we're so grateful for our military yeah. and their families and that, you know, we have the freedom today because of, what the family sacrifice, mm-hmm. you know, it's just such a beautiful thing for yeah. sure.
Yeah. I've had friends that call since John went into ministry and, you know, past, you know, we'll say post accident, post all of the trauma, not that there isn't daily trauma still, but they say like, oh my gosh, remember when you guys, and I don't want to sound naive. I just don't live there anymore. And I'd like to think that, and I know that's how Jesus is with us. So every time we fall and we stumble, it's not like God's like, well, remember when you screwed up 5 years ago? I really like to view my marriage that way, that we have a chance to every day do right by each other. Because people used to say, if you took all of the things, this is prior accident, let's say prior 2012. If you were to take all of the terrible things that John had ever done to Sarah and all of the terrible things that Sarah had done to John in 11 years, you would probably look at those two pieces of paper and say, those two should probably not be married. They have every reason to not be married. And we can look at them and go, but God, because I honestly don't live there anymore. We've been to talks or we've counseled other couples and they just don't think that whatever they're dealing with, even if it's not accidents or hospital stays, maybe it's an affair, maybe it's something that they're going through, maybe it's a loss of a child. They just look at us and they say, we are never going to get past this. And we just say, you cannot, but God can. Because I have so many people that say, Sarah, you are a superhero. Sarah is nothing. God is everything. God is everything. This is not by me, but him.
Right.
So good. I love hearing you say that. And I'm thinking about even my own marriage of just that when we have those hard days, to know that that next day, it can be new. Mm-hmm. And that there is grace and there is room for change. Mm-hmm. And there's room to grow and move forward. Yeah. So even if nobody heard anything else, maybe someone even in a struggling marriage can go, but God, he can come in, he can change me, he can change my spouse. Let's do this, God.
Let's do it. Yeah.
I love that. But for those listening who have been through trauma, who are maybe in the midst of it now, okay, they have had something really hard happen, tragedy, transitions, they're grieving. What could you say to them right now to speak truth and also encourage them?
Well, right in the thick of it, I would say that you need to give yourself grace, because just because someone else is handling something, whatever it is, a certain way, don't compare yourself and your healing to someone else's. I used to see other people who just, and not even just through this, but even in daily life, like you go somewhere and you're walking through the mall and your kids are, I mean, I can remember years ago, my kids are pulling at me. My daughter, who's 11 now, is snarking attitude at me. And I'm like, and then I see like this mom and daughter and they're like having this lovely conversation. I'm all, why, why? And I just think that we have to have grace for ourselves and we have to have grace for each other, because we don't know what's happening behind each other's closed doors. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that moment looked like before, but again, we don't know what the moments can look like after.
Right.
And we just have to trust that God is sovereign and he's in control. Because as a military wife, I want control and I still struggle with control every day. I struggle with, well, I'm going to have my family go this way. And I have to remind myself, it is not about me. It is not about me. Yeah. And I would just say to anyone who is in the thick of it, I would say, give yourself grace and ask for help. Ask for help. I am totally the guilty one that believes that if all of the things get done all day, I've got some badge of honor to wear. And there is nothing wrong with saying someone needs to step in and help me with this.
Yeah, that's good. Mm. Oh, Sarah, we have so enjoyed and been on the, tip of our seats going like this as you share your whole story with us.
Yeah.
But it's just, I've, man, it's just so encouraging. It's so encouraging to hear what Jesus is doing in other people's lives. And so just thank you so much for just sharing with us today and sharing the hard moments, but also the most beautiful moments. And we pray that this reaches so many people around the world to hear your testimony, what God's done. For those that want to maybe know more about y'all, we know we can definitely put in the show notes, but you, your husband has written two books, right?
Yes.
And you have written a children's book.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So share with us a little bit, you know, tell people where they can get these books and what they are about. And yeah, so we can direct people to you.
Okay. John has so, he has so much to say. And so many people that he wants to tell. And he gets into his office and he just pounds out these books. And I cannot edit them as fast as he is writing them. He's about to release a book called Aftermath, which is his own story through his own words. He released one before that, Navigating Storms in Christian Ministry. And I believe that it comes from a very cool place because he has not been in ministry very long.
Yeah.
But being a military man, he sees things in the church and he has things to say that he wants to help the church. I mean, if the church is what he loves and he wants to be a part of, and he just wants to let people know, like, it can change. It needs to get back to Jesus and always be about Jesus and not about us. And so, that was the first one. Then Aftermath's about to come out. And I mean, he's just going to be a book writing machine from here until Jesus comes, as far as I'm concerned.
I love that.
My books are not as profound. I am a children's book writer. I actually found solace in the hospital. I had my phone next to me and I speak in rhyming words to myself. It's real. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I love that.
I'm kind of like a doctor. Like, if you want to explain something to me, just explain to me in Dr. Seuss language and then I'll get it. I understand it.
That's
fun. Yeah. Like, and so, I was sitting, I think when I was in the hospital, I wanted to go back to the very innocence part of my children's childhood, because when you are in the hospital and you watch your little girls, they're literally playing Barbie dolls on a hospital floor. Mm. I wanted to remember those days when they were young and the best parts of their personalities. And I wanted them to know that I will always remember those parts about them. So my first book was about, it's about four little animals, but my four little girls. So they're in animal form, but it's the best parts of my four girls' personalities put into a little book. And so you can get John's books and my books on Amazon. So yeah. And then I have another book coming out actually next weekend. And I took all of John's all of the funny, tough, rough and tough men that John has been friends with in the military over the years. And I made them into cute animal form. And John shares the gospel with these crazy, crazy animals.
Oh my gosh. I love that. So
this
much.
Is fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. So creative.
So the thing is about my books is they are people that I personally know, but I think that they will only know when they see themselves in these things. So it's not like I'm not taking their stories and like making it all in one.
I love that. Well, we will definitely link those in the show notes. Okay, Sarah. So you've been listening for a while. So you know that we ask everybody that we interview on our show three questions at the end. Are you ready for those questions?
No, but yes.
Okay. Okay. Question number one.
Okay.
If you could go back and give your pre-minister wife self one piece of advice, what would it be?
My pre-minister wife self. I would say to remember that not everybody that you run into is going to be a believer and not to take everything so personally.
That's good. Good girl.
That's where we all need that.
I can be a little protective. When John and I were in high school, they used to say that John was a Rottweiler and Sarah was a Chihuahua. You want to know why they'd say that? They would say that because John could say John could just stand there and I could say whatever I want, because when the little dog's behind the big dog, she's like, you be quiet, you be quiet. And that's how I feel as a pastor. So sometimes I'm all, oh, no, he can handle that. Put that away.
That's so great. That's that word picture. That's great. You really are good with the animals. Mm-hmm. Making people animals, yeah, you know.
See, I see
that. I see what you did there.
I can.
Okay.
I can put them into animals.
Next question. What do you do for fun by yourself or with your spouse to get your mind off of all of these ministry things, book writing, everything you've got going on in your life? Okay. What are you doing for fun?
What are we doing for fun? Well, I am writing children's books because I think it's super fun. That's what I do in my like alone time by myself. Mm-hmm. You never know what's gonna come out of there. I would say John and I for fun right now, we're trying to kind of learn like a whole, we have four girls, but our girls are 25, 23, 19, and 11. So we like to say they're 25, 23, 19, and surprise. So we have like a little one at home, but we have one in college, and then we have two that are married. So we're kind of like learning this new normal of like, we don't have a billion kids to chase around. And so we can actually have date. Like if we want to go on a date, we just do it. And so, I would say date nights are probably our most fun thing right now. We've really come to a rhythm where we know every Wednesday while our little one is at youth group, we're like date night. So I love date night.
That's good. That's awesome. Yeah. I agree with all of that. Okay. Last question. You could tell the church congregation one thing without reservation and have them really listen and respond. What would you say?
Oh my gosh. I would say that we need to remember that ministry in any type of way is just human beings trying to tell people about a miraculous creator, and that we are not always going to say everything right, that we are not always going to act right, but we are doing our best to share with them what we know for their salvation.
Yeah, that's good. That was short and sweet and to the point.
We are human beings. We are human beings.
Absolutely. Sarah, thank you so much for today and your honesty and your vulnerability. And I believe wholeheartedly this is going to change lives through you and John's testimony. 100%. So thank you for just taking the time to do this.
You're welcome.
And we support you and can't wait to see what else God has for you and John, because y'all just keep coming. Y'all just keep saying, yes, Jesus. And so you're writing books and, you know, do counseling and all the things. So you keep going. We are supporting you and we love you. And until next time, guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, friends, if you have enjoyed this episode as much as we have, please help us spread the word on Facebook and Instagram.
If you didn't know yet, Instagram is where all the fun is at. From dance reels on Wednesdays to spiritual encouragement and laugh out loud posts in between, there is something for everyone.
And last, but certainly not least, if you could take a moment right now to stop what you're doing and give us a rating and review, even subscribe to our podcast, this seriously helps other people find us who wouldn't be able to otherwise. Thank you so much for your love and support. We hope you'll tune in next week.